Welcome, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we have a feast of metaphors and anarchist occultism and tarot unfurling before us, but first a few little announcements. Yesterday was Molly Ivan's birthday, August 30th, 1944. Bless her heart, we call upon her now. She did many, many great spicy things. Her Mercury quintile Saturn, irresistible eloquence about profound things. And she did the most fantastic Camille Paglia takedown of satire, so delicious. You can see it on my Patreon page, Visionary Activist Show, which will be further coming alive on the 27th anniversary of the Visionary Activist Show, which is September 5th, 1996, with great proffering of archives, right? So September 5th, 1996, the first Visionary Activist Show was with James Hillman. It's a great show. It really holds up now, and it's available. And as we know, Pacifica does not pay its weekly show people actual money, but it does pay great wealth. That's all of us. And 27 years of the show of critique and solution. Not every show a winner. You win some, you lose some, but many great ones. And so I'm going to be combing through the archives to find, you know, there's gold in those archives. And so way back then, you know, I did, the way the show started was I got a call from Asada Imam, who was working at the station then. Great, all praise be upon her. And she said, we've been playing some of your Sounds True, you know, recordings, and it's got this huge response, you know, and visionary activism, and Pacifica's a pain in the butt, and they don't pay anything. And I go, perfect, that's perfect, right? And way back then, you know, working with Sounds True, I go, it's visionary activist astrology, and they said, activism doesn't pay. And it's like, no, I think you're wrong, but here we are. And as I just remember a guru, I can't remember which one, saying to his Mahatma, he wanted all kinds of money. And the Mahatma said, but where will the money come from? And the guru said, from wherever it is now. And so, yes, if you want to toss in a tip, that's perfectly great. Coyote Network News will show you everything. And Great Dream News Council 2 begins on Tuesday, September 5th, 7 Tuesdays. And you can find out about that on Coyote Network News as well. But just to give you a little feeling for the quirkitude, you know, Prigozhin, right? We look at all the news, it's all mythic. The Sabian symbol for Prigozhin's sun, S-U-N, is a plane doing a nosedive. It's like, oh, so literal. We want to play with symbols so that we can choose on what level of metaphor as opposed to actual plane doing nosedive, and we go, all right, all these quirky things. But it's that idea of no sense navigating the news by oneself, you know, let's participate. Dream news is a description and an exhortation. Let's participate. So again, more on that, you know, at coyotenetworknews.com and also the Patreon Visionary Activist Show. There we go. So more than perfectly, right? We welcome Sarah Calvarese. You'll have to correct my pronunciation. Astro-anarchist ally sharing enthusiasm for the U.S. Pluto return, the upcoming outer planet astrology, Pluto moving into Aquarius, Neptune moving into Aries, Uranus moving into Gemini. And she's always willing to have a good discussion about the 8th house. Me too. She is a South Philadelphia-based author, illustrator, astrologer, tarot reader, and owner of the 8th house, a brick-and-mortar retail space I'll have to visit. She left her career in chemistry and engineering in 2020 to pursue full-time creative work. Yes, we need her. Her projects to date include the 8th house tarot, an astrological tarot deck, prism tarot, mundane magic, tarot, stories, a collaborative oracle deck, and magic, an interactive tarot and astrology book. Her latest is Turning Terrestrial Tides Tarot, and you can find out about that at PM Press, may they be praised, you know, .org. And it turns out, because I was talking to the publicist going, more occult anarchism, because next week we'll be hosting Emily Lagalisse on anarchism and the occult. occult futures of anarchism with attention to The Conspiracy of Kings and The Conspiracy of Peoples with a foreword by Barbara Ehrenreich. That's next week. And so I was like, to the wonderful publicist at PM Press, I go, send me more anarchist occultists. And they go, yes, here we are, synchronicity. And it turns out I did a reading for you, Sarah, seven-ish years ago, so all jolly. And then just to quote you praising me for fun, she says, you're probably the single biggest influence of my astrology practice, so I have a lot to thank you. Your work is always on my recommended reading list. So welcome, Sarah.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's adorable. It's a great pleasure. Because it is weaving, right? Weaving everything that we hold dear, which is participatory divination, you know, to, you know, these, well, I love also on the PDF of your tarot book, cards and book that you can describe, you know, it will be for sale starting next week at PM Press, and they have a sale going on, so go to PM Press, everybody. We love them. Yes, that's so wonderful, so we can dive in anywhere you want. But I love our shared. We're in turbulent times, you know. The U.S. is experiencing its first Pluto return. Let's start there.
We are in turbulent times. I mean, I think one might be living under a rock, not to feel that on some molecular level. But the astrology of right now is really interesting. And thinking about living through three outer planet sign shifts back to back, the way we are all presumably going to do, that was the inspiration for the project, because it's so much change in such a short period of time. The outer planets pack such a huge punch. I'm very excited. And I mean, of course, as you mentioned earlier, you're a huge influence on my astrology practice, but I love the idea of looking backwards in history to be able to look forward at what some of these transits might represent. And, you know, thinking about the U.S. Pluto return, the last time Pluto was in Capricorn was around the time of the French Revolution. I believe it moved into Aquarius and the American Revolution, of course. And then with Neptune moving into Aries, that would have been the U.S. Civil War. We would have seen the introduction of opioids. And Uranus and Gemini, the last time we saw this, there were so many inventions, like so many inventions associated with Uranus and Gemini. And so thinking about like what those shifts could mean going forward, yeah, things feel turbulent now, but what's possible for the future?
Right. Yeah, and I sent you, you know, last night, I don't know if you had a chance to read it, but Heather Cox Richardson is a living treasure and just amazingly prodigious. Just every day she puts out a historic, pertinent to now thing, and she just, you know, delineating the great danger that we're in, which we know. And the way I think about it is Pluto returning for the first time, you know, to America. It's like, okay, America, you can have a democracy, or try that. We haven't tried that yet, but only if you look at everything deeply and go to the root of the poison and metabolize it. Is that in accord? Does that hum in accord with yourself?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I think the fact that the return is happening in Capricorn, I mean, U.S. has its natal Pluto late degree Capricorn. I want to say it's like 27 degrees, I believe, in the U.S. natal
plus,
chart.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, it's going to station there in about a minute.
Oh, yeah. So fun. And then we'll get to pass through that anorectic, the 29th degree there yet again, as it makes its way into Aquarius. But yeah, I think that there's an interesting tie to capitalism here. And I want to say Pluto entered Capricorn. It was around the time of, like the Wall Street, the, what you call it, the words are escaping me here, the Occupy Wall Street,
yes,
movement.
There you go.
I was like, my brain just had a factory reset. I have lots of Neptune transits right now, personally.
We're all spacey. That's fine. Yeah, absolutely.
So it's interesting to think about where we've been since that Occupy Wall Street movement and how much power corporations have now. And I think that the US Pluto return is a good opportunity to look at that in a really critical way and say, what can we do differently? What can we transform? What can be better?
Yeah, no, it's a fulcrum crucial time, and that's why participatory news I think is so important. And I love always quoting Terry Pratchett, wonderful animistic novelist, now an ancestor, alas, his characters. But Tiffany Aiken is the great young girl witch, and in one of my favorites, so pertinent to now, in the novel I Shall Wear Midnight, the cunning man has come to town and created mob mind. And mob mind elicits the worst of humans, the rough music that causes somebody to pick up a stick or to, shout an insult or whatever. And so she says, and the cunning man finds purchase in all whose hearts are full of grievance. I think this is really important. My ally Pat Ewing said, "What is the antonym of grievance?" And I go, "Oh, that's a good question, because authoritarianism runs on grievance, and the antonym antidote is, gratitude and blessing and actual grief, because grievance is and grief is really love." But anyway, Tiffany Aiken says to the cunning man, "Your power is only in rumor and lies. You bore your way into people when they're uncertain and weak and worried and frightened, and they think their enemy is other people, when their enemy is and always will be you, the master of lies. Outside you are fearsome, inside you are nothing but weakness, and inside I am like flint." Anyway, I love that. Woofy.
I love that.
It's really great. So her job is to dissolve mob mind, right? And that's our job too, in a sense, to d you can't talk anybody out of a cult, right? But to kind of backstage in these Neptunian realms are going experiment, experiment, to dissolve the hold, of mob mind, and then it behooves us to metabolize the poison and then create an atmosphere conducive to the desirable that draws out the best of everybody. And that's where I love anarchism, and love, on this, excuse me, it's very moving, on this 27th anniversary, approaching 27th anniversary of the show, all the chapters of our life really report in, and I loved astrology from prehistory, right? And then I had great mentors in the anarchist realm, and they said, "Oh, you gave us astrology and spirituality, and we gave you anarchism." And I go, "They belong together, right? And you're doing it too, right?"
Yeah, they do belong together. I've been into astrology for a really long time as, I guess, just an interest or a draw. I don't know. I have a lot of eighth and 12th house placements. I think that's just kind of what you're into when when you have
I love that.
some of those placements. And the older I got and the more I started to understand the world around me, the two are almost like inextricable. You kind of can't have one without the other. And I went to school for the hard sciences. I studied chemical engineering because that was a thing where you could easily get a job. But my true love is theoretical math, theoretical physics. And there's just not really, a lot you can, unless you're going to go work in academia, which I didn't have much of an interest in. And the more I studied that, the more I realized that, you study enough physics, it comes right back around to metaphysics. It's, the two are sort of inextricable. And so I feel the same way with astrology and anarchism. It's just, it's all like related in this very Jungian way. It's like, it's not a mistake, but you also can't really explain it, but it just makes sense,
Right. Well, because I've been having such a good time, with the feed that PM Press has been feeding me, first starting off with Charles Allison and his book on Master Macno, and we did two really jaunty shows. And that was, excuse me, super, wonderful. And then, as Pluto enters Aquarius, because I'd mentioned to him and to everybody, almost all the environmental writers I've been hosting lately have all been referencing Kropotkin and mutual aid. And we go, right, it's the time now. You know, what is it to be good citizens on the planet, right? And mutual aid and to compost the, you know, competition, capitalist, you know, survival of the fittest. And what Kropotkin, of course, was saying is like, no, the more we see evolution, the more cooperation we see, which is what's now being proven, right? So it really is the right time, you know, and just to think of, you know, the power of community, the way I'd understood it, is that it was the form of spiritual political practice. It was the idea of each person, you know, in sources their own Saturn, right? Their own authority, you know, and is you know, and this, well, there's a million ways this can go here. Then the community comes into accord. And it reminds me, once talking to a uber conservative guy, I was pointed at a gathering because I like crossing borders. And the conservative guy said, you know, what do you know about Edmund Burke? And I go, oh, not much. And he goes, well, this conversation about big government, small government's irrelevant. What Edmund Burke said is the more we cultivate inner authority and citizenship manners, the fewer outer Saturn laws and rules we need. And I go, this is a great conversation. You know, I said, this is, you know, anarchism. And he goes, oh, I suppose it is. This is metaphysics 101, you know, so, I love that. The more we insource our own authority, then we come into a community accord, but it does require, you know, what we're all, you know, dedicating to, which is what is good citizenship of the earth kind of manners. And so, you know, Pluto dipped into Aquarius briefly this spring and then was like, no, let me go back into all the structures that are unstable and proven unstable by the stresses, you know, condos built on sand, healthcare systems, whatever. You know, let's go back and look at what's weak and also what's strong, you know, and then we move into Aquarius and available ingenuity that we want to kind of play with. But I'll toss it back to you after one thing here, because when you said the American Revolution, and I love when Mao was asked what he thought of the French Revolution, he said, "It's too soon to say." Anyway, so I thought that was very Chinese witty. So we're in this, you know, again. Pluto, the intelligence of death and rebirth and intensity. And resonating, I think, the part of all of us that feels like we have a mission. We might not always be clear as to what it is, but we do. But we know that we have one, right? It's a true mythology. Does that resonate with yourself?
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah. And I think that it's interesting, you know, when we're looking at France right now and things that have been happening in France recently with all of the protests and whatnot in the streets. And it's like, it definitely harkens back to, you know, a modern but similar feel to what, you know, what might have been happening during the French Revolution. And so, you know, in doing workshops and things like that, and just being an online community with other astrologers and whatnot, we were talking about the US Pluto return for, you know, probably months, years up to it, because we're all like, oh, what do we think it's going to be, you know? And I don't know. I don't think I ever saw it as being, you know, a repeat of the American Revolution or anything like that. But what I am seeing is a lot of people's thinking is changing. The way they think about things is changing as the stress is put on the weak systems. We're seeing people talking about affordable housing who've never really considered that, or changing a broken healthcare system, or even there are a lot of people who are talking about how they would love to see the two-party system that we currently have go. And I think I listened to one of your earlier episodes where someone was talking about bees and how bees vote. Mm-hmm. And
Yes,
I was
yes,
thinking,
yes,
oh my
yes.
gosh, this would be so much better. This would be so much better if we did it this way.
No, yeah.
Yeah,
I
it's
love that.
so
That
I.
was one. Oh, sorry. Back to you. Yeah.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, that was the replay. But it was such a good replay 2 weeks ago from 2008 with Janine Benyus, and it was so good. Do you know how bees vote? And the whole realm of biomimicry, which is so crucial to us, we'll bring it back to the animism of Uranus and Taurus and the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction next year. It's like, okay, we gotta align and cooperate with this. And so just briefly for those who might have listened to it, but she said when bees need to move, they send out scouts, self-chosen scout bees, who go out. And she said, and they might take an hour investigating like a hollow log or whatever, and then they all come back and they dance the place that they all saw, the different places, right? And the bees watching, going, oh, we like your dance of that place. And when it's a majority of the bees who like the dance about a particular future home, then they all go there. It's wonderful.
Yeah, it's wonderful. And I think there's a lot of potential in looking to nature, looking to what sort of already is and already has worked for so long in the natural world as a way to clue us in to how we've strayed from that. We are a very arrogant species, I'll say. And there's a lot of wisdom in nature and the things that are all around us, and I think there might be more of a return to that. And even as Pluto moves into Aquarius, I literally describe this as power in the hands of the people, where it feels like Pluto in Capricorn feels more power in the hands of the oligarchs or power in the hands of corporations or the powers that be. It feels like we might see power in the hands of the people again as Pluto moves back into Aquarius, and then we have to decide what that means for us.
Well, it's an assignment, and when we look at the actual many forms of news, right? The Dream News Council is reconvening. I've always thought that there were many kinds of news. There's the Jungian news, right, which is phallic narcissism rose 20 points today as the MAGA Republicans did, eliminated all protection of wetlands due to, Clarence Thomas being wooed by the guy who was pitching that thing. Anyway, so yeah, so there's phallic narcissism, Jungian news. There's the and then some people in my council was like, I don't like to listen to the news. I go, there's the forest news, there's the birds news, there's the human news. Wherever you have an affinity, it's all speaking to us, right? And let's tease it into participation. But it is intriguing that Pluto was in Capricorn for 15 years, going, there you go, there you go. The structure, how the death and rebirth of the structure, and the looking at the foundation of this country and what is there to be retrieved in a sense. And then it enters Aquarius full on January 20th, quirkily, of 2024. For 24 years, right? So it's like, all right, this is it. We're on, and so it's the structure, and I suppose it's adding retroactively, an extended invitation for us all to be dedicated to collective well-being. Again, the embrace, the kindness eclipsing cruelty, all of these crucial dynamics. But I love you taking theoretical math and physics, and physics and metaphysics get married, then they can have a child reverent science as though life really mattered. So that's a beautiful thing. And again, wherever you want. Oh, well, I mean, I have a list, and you have the dates and stuff like that. So I love the outer planets, Pluto, Uranus, Neptune, as representing living qualities of intelligence, of nature's intelligence that reside within us and connect us to the world. And And so as they change sign, I view them as the keepers of the collective conversation, cultural and biological. And the beauty of the astrological language is exquisite language of our interior psyche, separated by a thin membrane we call identity, from the whole big, huge conversation, right? So wherever Pluto, everything is, it pours into everyone's life, right? So the
Yeah,
whole death, rebirth,
absolutely.
and structure.
And I've been thinking a lot about Neptune coming up too, because someone I think I watched a TikTok or something the other day, and someone was describing how, for the past however many years, that they felt like time isn't real, that time feels like taffy, that it feels like it could be stretched and pulled and distorted. And I just thought, well, that's very Neptune in Pisces. And I was doing the mental math and I'm like, well, that would have been around the time that Neptune went into Pisces. And so I'm wondering what it's going to feel like to feel Neptune in Aries after this, because even when we think about solar shifts, right, from Pisces into Aries is a big, sort of being like floating in this Neptunian liminal space, and then boom, you're just dropped into Aries season, which is that like cardinal fire, go, go, go. And so I've been thinking a lot about like what might we expect for Neptune and Aries? Like what might that feel like? And the last time we saw this was a civil war, and I don't know that that means a literal civil war happening here, but I wonder if there might be discussion about borders. I wonder if there might be discussion about water, right? I mean, Neptune and Aries, water war. Is kind of what I think about as we may be faced with some real tough things around water.
Right.
But and mental health too, right? I mean, Neptune rules mental health, and I'm wondering, does Neptune and Aries mean that we're going to finally address mental health as not a luxury in the United States or globally, and or potentially even the opioid crisis, because Neptune often deals with escapism, and that can show up as addiction and addictive substances. And I'm wondering, does Neptune and Aries represent the time where we finally face the opioid crisis that's been going for so long? But it just feels like we've been in such a holding pattern in Neptune and Pisces, and time does feel sort of strange when I think like, oh, if it feels like I just had my reading with you, and I was like, oh gosh, that was in 2017. That's 6 years ago, but it doesn't feel like it's been 6 years. Like time feels totally malleable as
Well,
Neptune's been in Pisces.
that can be a great. I mean, I think it's all cumulative. It's like, do we have enough time? And I think the planetary beings say, well, it depends on what kind of time you're talking. If you're talking about realistic tick time, we don't have enough time to answer our phone calls or our email or save the world. But if we're talking about dream time, Neptune
Well, that's
Pisces, what
different.
in Chinese fairy tales is called, I'm sorry, say what?
Said, well, that's different. Dream time's very different.
Right. Well, we want to keep it with us in our magic backpack. In Chinese fairy tales, it's called irrational time, where you go into reverie, you enter the fairy world, where you retrieve the gifts that you need, and it seems like, hours and days go by and you come back here, minutes, right? So reverie. And the way I was thinking about Neptune and Pisces and then the change into Aries is, live the dream. This time for all of us, it's as though kind of backstage, all the critters meet backstage going, what are we going to do about the humans? We got to either kill them or heal them. Let's do both. Let's make everything that has ever moved humans to collaborative goodness available in a new way. And that's part of what you're doing. We're going to take a very, very short musical break in a moment, but we'll come back with all of this to take all the divinatory forms and all the wisdom and each person's affinity, and to bring it alive in a fresh new way, and then to live it, going, ah, the power of dreams and atmosphere. So yeah, no, all that you say is true. There's a descriptive dynamic that we'll come back to, and then a kind of instructive dynamic. So our wonderful guest this hour, is wonderful ally Sarah Calvarisi. Is that how I say it?
Calvaries, yeah.
Calvaries. Okay, no Italian ending. Okay, Sarah Calvaries, and we will be right back after this very short break.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Ooh, chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo skyship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, for 27 years on Tuesday. And our perfect for now wonderful guest, Sarah Calvaries, is here to co-cahoot. Her latest offering is Turning Terrestrial Tides Tarot from PM Press. It will be on sale through them, pmpress.org, next week. There we go. Congratulations. That's wonderful. So, just segue, so you're bringing old things alive in a fresh new way, right?
That is the hope. I do have Pluto in my third house, and so that's my hope.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah, the thing is I'm solidly a millennial, but I remember this time really before the internet was widely available. And I remember zines. I was very into, the Indigo Girls and the whole Riot Girl movement as a child, which was, I'm sure, super fun for my parents. But I remember zines and just being so, I thought it was just so cool that like anybody could make one. Anybody could make a zine about anything that they wanted. And, now with the internet, sharing ideas is a little different. We have a more direct path to that than making zines, but people still make zines. And I love the radical quality of just it's media by people for people. And when I was thinking about the outer planet astrology and tarot, I was like, oh, this should be a zine deck. It should be done in the style of zine. And so, yeah, I am hoping to interpret tarot and astrology or use the language of tarot and astrology in as many new ways as I possibly can. I've done poetry decks. I've done, color-coded flashcard beginner kid-friendly decks. Little bit of everything, frankly. I've done an astrology deck. We did an oracle deck where we were assigning myths to different people to retell them, and then we would make an oracle card out of it. So any part of the astrological or tarot language that I can work with, I do like to play with it a little bit and see if we can reinterpret it in new ways. And zines felt right for this project, this sort of power in the hands of the people, media by the people for the people, with the flavor of some of the outer planet astrology.
No, I love that. I'm perusing the PDF that you and your publicist both sent me, which is great. So the zine image, and when you say you have Pluto in the third house, let's for our team intensity in the realm of 2-3 projects at once, being a nerve synapse, but also conversational playfulness. So it's what you're describing. It's like, come on, we're going to talk about intense things. It'll be fun. Right? Because is that you?
Yes, that is me. Absolutely.
Right. Which is great. And because conversational playfulness about intense things is one part of what is most welcome. And then just to tease it with everything, you know, the whole realm of biomimicry and Janine Benyus, you know, starting this off, and it's the sine qua non really for life on this planet. And it completely transcends politics. It's like the bees practicing democracy, because when people see like the solutions that nature offers and that Janine and many biomimicry people make available, people are just like, oh, that's so beautiful. You know, we have an instinct for beauty, and it's not like rah, rah, rah. It's like, oh. And Janine talks about, you know, talking to tough kind of even sort of, you know, right-wing-ish kind of engineers. And she goes, well, let me show you about how, you know, if we mimic shark skin, then you have material that self-cleans. And they're like, oh, that's so beautiful. And I just want to pitch this to us. I've been so ardent about Uranus, nature's evolutionary trickster genius in Taurus, the realm of participatory animism. And, you know, as we move into next year, there'll be a Jupiter-Uranus conjunction at 21 plus Taurus, whose image is a white dove flying over troubled waters. And we go, ooh, howdy. But it calls to everyone, you know, Jupiter-Uranus are the two biggest path openers, and they say, consider, with the stars, right, what each of us, all of us, are dedicated to. You know, and I think the Saturn authority part of all of us is good at dedicating and wondering what we're dedicated to, and defining things and taking vows. But I, the way I'm playing now, find that Saturn's terrible at, well, how are we going to do that? How are we going to save the world? How am I going to make a living doing this thing? And it's like, no. Saturn's job is what? Not how. Jupiter and Uranus chime in and go, we'll do how. You tell us what. We'll do how. Do common sense things. That's important. But not to let the compelling illusion of realism be an imaginative impediment, right? So that's how I'm working with it now. So when I look at the Jupiter-Uranus conjunction, April 21st, 2024, it's like, it's a rousing call, like white dove flying over troubled waters, for everyone's ingenuity. And contests and high school contests, you know, who can solve this, you know, community problem, you know, and you get a full scholarship to college. If just experiment, you know, who brought what, you know, everybody's got something to contribute, all hands on deck. That's kind of the woofy way I'm feeling now. But,
oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't know if it was you or someone else I was listening to who was talking about, I guess there is like a fungi or something that is working towards like eating pet plastics in the ocean. And I'm thinking like, yes, these are the kind of solutions like that felt very Jupiter, Uranus and Taurus to me. Like that conjunction feels very much like practical wisdom, practical nature, things that are already here by design being used in innovative ways as solutions. And I wish I could remember what it was either something I read or something I listened to, and there's some, you know, fungus or organism or something, and it's literally able to eat plastics, and they're hoping to use it to clean up some of the plastics in the ocean.
Right. And then our plastic, banished plastic allies say, yes, but that's not to let people continue to use plastic. Even if nature's going to bail us out, it means it's like also, you know, the energy issue, right, all before us, you know, is everybody's got to stop using or start using less, right? It's like when I hosted Paul Stamets, the first time Paul Stamets was ever on radio was on the Visionary Activist Show, and I was asking him about the mushrooms that are very Pluto, right? It's the underworld that will metabolize poison. And I said, can they metabolize radioactivity? It was during Fukushima and everything. And he goes, no, nothing in nature can metabolize radioactivity, but the little guys are working on it, right? So nature is so kind in a way, you know, to help us out of this trap, but we still need manners. And anarchos manners, no hero, no outside being, each person tapping into their own responsibility to community well-being and making that vow. So yeah, right. And Stamets has a million great examples of how slime mold helped design the Tokyo subway system. Can we be humble enough to cooperate with the design engineering genius of slime mold, right? Yes, and so all of your studies, right, the theoretical math and physics, and now the anarchism and the occultism and the tarot cards and everything, it all works together, right? I mean, there's bound to be something in your theoretical math and physics that you're taking with you.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because you do come across people who are very, rigid in terms of their disbelief around things like tarot or astrology or things like that. Especially mm-hmm. when I was in like a corporate environment, it was really interesting because I was very open about, you know, what I do as an astrologer and a tarot reader. And I was illustrating tarot decks at that time and, you know, doing this day job that was incredibly straight-laced in corporate and in STEM. And yeah, I mean, they sort of giggle at you a little bit, but then, I would say, well, of course you would think that you're probably, you know, this sun sign and this moon sign, and then they would be that sun sign and that moon sign. It's a, you know, but it's sort of a thing where it's like the astrological language, even though you don't believe in it, you're no exception to it, you know? And it was more silly than anything else, but yeah, it's interesting that so many people think that it's so separate, that, you know, science is hard. Sciences are sort of separate from this idea of metaphysics. And, I would argue that they both have a lot of things in common, that, you know, they're both here to try and extrapolate information that we don't have from information that we do. They're both here to try to help. They want to improve our quality of life in some way, both. One hopes, you know, not all science is necessarily working for that end goal. But I think in general, science is here for human solutions, right? We want a better quality of life. And so I think that they're just more interrelated than people realize. And the more and more I got into theoretical math and physics and were asking questions, right, down at a subatomic level about can we predict where an electron is going to be within a certain level of error at a given moment in time? And when you zoom way out, what you're really asking about is predestiny, right? Within a certain margin of error. And, you know, it's just incredible that the further down you go in a granular way, you just come right back around to the big picture, to the metaphysical stuff. And the two are absolutely related in my mind. And I think it's very interesting that people have such a polar relationship to it in the real world in practice sometimes. But even that with politics too, politics is tied into it. The idea of democracy, anarchism, all of it is just tied together to me. I can't really separate them.
Right. And you know, it's like, I think it was a friend, you know, in 1987, I was writing an essay for Time Life series something astrology. But he said, you know, once physics declares, as it has, you know, way back, that there's meaning in patterns, the argument's over. We go, well, then we're in accord. There's meaning in patterns, and we're pattern tracking beings. So, yeah. So physics and metaphysics, perfectly wonderful, right? You know, and then that idea of, you know, the decolonized mind, I love the Thai saying, because we were never colonized, we never lost our animism. Right, and way back on the first show, September 5th, 1996, I did with James Hillman, I remember James Hillman then scampered off after, you know, we did a great 40 minutes, and he went off, and somebody called in. I remember, and I waved to her. It was Norma in Berkeley who said, you know, why are you talking about all this gobbledygook? This, you know, the world is owned by capitalists and imperialists. You know, why are you? This used to be a smart station, right? And then I started a practice of in the show of what I wish I'd said last week, right? And saying there are those who feel so ardently that the world is owned by capitalists and imperialists that we can't afford to speak of indigenous wisdom, participatory animism, you know, but we would say because the world's owned by an imperialist and capitalist, then we want to decolonize and embrace all of our capacities for kahooting. And then that same person, Norma in Berkeley, later became an ally, would call in going, that was a great show. And anyway, so hello, whoever she is, but that was a, you know, we're all in this dream together. The Norma in Berkeley part of myself, you know, calling in to go, this is nonsense, right? And we're used to that, although it was James Hillman, for goodness sake, a pretty good astrologer, but we didn't even talk that much astrology. We were talking many, many things, but here we are. And so it is, you know, it's a participatory dynamic, a language that guides us into collaborating. And, you know, as we know, the word disaster means against the stars, disaster, and the word consider means with the stars, right? So even right now we're gathering to consider in order to avert greater disaster when we pit our small wills against the larger pulse, right? And so we got there with the thing there. And I don't know about you, but, you know, again, we've been devoted for a long time. But I think it, in the spirit of Pluto, I think it's helpful. Every now and then I go about astrology that I love, you know, but I go, what if it's all nonsense? What if it's all nonsense? Because sometimes, you know, when I listen to other astrologers, I go, it sounds like nonsense. Let's throw it into the cauldron, you know, and then there's some fabulous thing, like what you just described, in which you go, there's no way I could have known that about this person in that kind of specific way. It's like, oh, there we go. But I think it's healthy to throw it in. Well, I think for all of us to throw things in going, yeah, anarchism, what if it's all nonsense? Oh, no, it's really great. And so there is this giant cauldron in which we toss things in and then go, oh, no, that we ladle it out. But in case it anything accrues, you know, superstition or dogma, you know, but it's all sort of dance steps, you know, how do we cooperate? But I want to go back to, you know, what, you know, you've been bringing forth. So Neptune collective dream vision, you know, I like everything everywhere, right? Like Pluto and Capricorn, I don't think it means, well, it can, you know, absolutely. You're good on this, you know, the rise of plutocrats and yes, there's that thing. But also the work of restructuring the world, you know, and then Neptune and Aries, let's, you know, all this Piscean realm, let's bring it into action. But you're also looking at, so Neptune enters Aries in 2025, right? So we'll need that. But I'm also looking at 2024 is a pretty crucial year. It's all on the table, you know, we can have different political conversations, and you know, and what's the most useful thing. I do love, yes, you wanted to say something, let me stop and toss it to you.
Well, yeah, I just want to say too, like, you know, Pluto and Capricorn, I don't think that there's any placement that's inherently good or bad, it just sort of is, right? That's sort of the nature of everything. And, you know, my long-term partner has a huge Capricorn stellium, and I tend to be connected to a lot of Capricorn people, which is interesting. And what I found is that Capricorn in its highest good is structured, it's stable, it's patient. And I found that a lot of people who have heavy cap placements tend to work in fields where that sort of skill set is needed. My partner works in a school for high support need, like special needs students. And I know a lot of Capricorn folks who work with like the disabled community, things like that. And I think that's really where Capricorn shines, right? You're absolutely right. Like in the structure, in the patience, and Capricorn's incredibly empathetic, which I don't think often it gets enough credit for that. But yeah, the part of the Pluto return that I think we're seeing right now that's being maybe a little amplified is, you know, power in the hands of the ultra wealthy. And that's, that's the part that I think everyone is sort of looking at going, okay, so something has to be done here. But yeah, and in 2024, I know we'll see some of these planets, we'll see like Neptune will dip into Aries and then retrograde back into Pisces. And then 2025 is when it goes back into Aries, I think, for its long haul stay. But
no,
yeah, what else did you have for... Oh, it doesn't?
Yeah, I don't think... No, it doesn't. Neptune doesn't go into Pisces until Aries until 2025, but it hums around. And then just for the fun of it, you know, so many ways to play. But I like Daniel Jamario saying the earliest image for Capricorn was the Council of Wise Women dedicated to the next seven generations. And we go, okay, that's good. You yourself have a Ceres Neptune conjunction. You know, in Capricorn, which is pragmatic mysticism. Let's live the dream on behalf of the Earth. And then just for the fun of it, I don't know if you know that your Pluto at 9 Scorpio is the secret soul of America. If we look at the back of a $100 bill, it's got a clock tower with a very specific time on it. And those Masons, those George Washington, the generals,
Three
the Masons,
Masons
were pretty specific. And if we do a chart for America using that time, it gives 9 plus Scorpio rising, which is your Pluto. And the image for that is a fellowship supper reunites old comrades. And we go, well, that's what this country or any country should be, you know, a fellowship supper reuniting, you know, old comrades, you know, and so anyway, so you have your own Capricorn thing, organizational structure and dedication and competence, you know, and to your partner, we go, there's probably no one who wouldn't want your partner to help organize their life, right? I mean, they're good at that, right?
Yes. That's definitely a skill
yeah.
set.
It is wonderful. And then when we were hosting Victor Shi, great Gen Z activist, and I was wondering, you know, who made up the letters and who made up the times? I think it's 1995 to 2012 is Gen Z. But I was looking at when that starts, and it was, you're coming up on it. It was the Jupiter-Neptune conjunction in Capricorn that begins Gen Z. And so I asked Victor Shi, without burdening him with astrology, because we didn't have enough time to, you know, I go, do you think there's a generational intelligence? And he goes, oh, yes, 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 yes. And then I said, just referring to Jupiter Neptune without saying that in Capricorn, I said, do you think this is a generation of competent people with big dreams and the competence to implement them? And he goes, absolutely. So that's good. Welcome everybody. But that there's your yeah. So there is that. And then Aquarius certainly has its shadow as well. You know, everything liberating or imprisoning. And I always quip to myself, we can be lonely on our own, but it takes a group in which to be alienated, right? So there's that. But you know, the way of gathering in groups that honors the unique creativity of everybody, right? There's the dogs chiming in, going, and remember dogs too. And then
mine's sitting here next to me.
Oh, that's very good, right? That's right. My animals are hooligans and they like to chew computer wire, so they're somewhere else at the moment. But I love you tracking. All right, so we have the big changes, and then to get through, you know, 2024, which is like, you know, and just for some sanity, some capacity to implement some structures good for all and that addresses climate crisis, you know, whatever, however we do that, you know, and maybe some long-term planning. But we also have one of the things next year, it's a Jupiter Pluto semi-square or something. You're probably, you know, better on this. Well, Jupiter and Neptune are semi-squared throughout 2024. So it's you know, wonder and curiosity, yes, but it also can be, you know, this theme I want to toss back to you of big bamboozling. I mean, big bamboozling, and we have people bamboozled by their desire to not be bamboozled. You know, we have the truth, and you're all delusional. And it's like, oh, no, anyway. So do you want to address, you know, how do you find it most effective to de-bamboozle the collective?
I think it's I think it's interesting when you talk about Saturn, right? Because Saturn being sort of like our sense of personal authority or, the self-possession that we all have. And I feel like Saturn gets kind of a bad rep when we talk about astrology, but it's a part of all of us that is necessary for this kind of like de-bamboozling work, right? And there's a lot of that going on. I mean, we're seeing stuff happening in the news every day where, sort of groups that live on the extremes trying to do big extreme things and claiming, yes, we have the truth, we have the answer, this is what needs to be done. And I think people relying on their Saturn is going to be the key, right? This idea of not really aligning yourself with, I'll say maybe prescribed ideologies, but more checking in with Saturn, right? And saying, well, what do I think about this? Is this true for me? How do I feel about this? Having sort of a critical, I'll say entertaining possibility,
There you go.
but
There you
living
go.
with a bit of a critical eye, critical lens here. Because it's interesting, I find my mother lives in the part of the country that you're from, and it was interesting when I met my stepfather at first. We had very, very, I'll say, differing beliefs, and the more we got to know each other over the time that they've been married, the more we realized we actually had lots of things in common on sort of a basic level.
We have one
Just,
minute.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I think that that's sort of where we have to go with something like this, where we have to look and say, well, what do we have in common? And when we do it on that level, I think it just is, it's easier for all of us to decide for ourselves.
Right. Yeah, and just on our way out, and thank you so much. Because Saturn is authority, it is the part of us we most tend to outsource to incompetent leaders and everything. And then just for all of us now, like the full moon last night, I just couldn't do anything before then. What Saturn opposes, Jupiter trines. So for all of us, the very thing that has been like kind of ugh, is the very thing that is getting ready to unfurl. Well, this is a great start of a long conversation, Sarah. I'm delighted to reconnect with you after 6, 7 years or whatever it was. Thanks to synchronicity, our wonderful guest Sarah Calvariz, again, her latest proffering is Turning Terrestrial Tides Tarot. You can find that at pmpress.org. It goes on sale next week. How wonderful. So thank you very much, Sarah, and let's keep our conversing going. Woof woof.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's great. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. And I'm Caroline Casey. Go to coyotenetworknews.com for more fun. And we will reconvene next week with more occultism and anarchism. Woof. Awoo. There we go.